are listening to the Reformed Initiative podcast, where we analyze and discuss Roman Catholic theology and practice from an evangelical perspective. Today's a good episode. It's a special episode because this is the last episode of our first season, episode number 20. And we praise God for how he's used this podcast in your lives, and we pray that he will continue to use this podcast in the lives of other people, in the lives of the evangelical church. So I'm sitting here as usual in the city center of Rome with Reed Carr and Leonardo De Chirico, my co-host. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Well, thank you.
Yep, well, and glad to be together again.
Yeah, so we've learned quite a bit in regards to podcasting this season, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, still have a lot to learn, but we have learned a lot thus far.
Yeah, it was off to a rough start at first, but we're glad to offer this important episode to you today, where we're going to talk about a very important person in modern history, someone by the name of Karol Wojtyła. Now, that name might not be familiar to any of you. Reed, why don't you tell us why that name should be familiar and why it's important and what it has to do with our episode today?
My guess is if most of our listeners could see the name written out that you just said, it might be, maybe there'd be more people that would recognize who it is. The Polish last names are famous for being difficult to pronounce, but yeah, Karol Wojtyła was better known as Pope John Paul II. And so, yeah, we're ending season one on an episode of him. If you may have come across some articles about him, the reason that there are some articles appearing about him is because it's this year is 100 years since his birth. He was born in 1920 near Krakow, Poland. And as Clay said, he's not many people would not know who or recognize the name of Pope John Paul II. He's one of the most influential people in the 20th century for sure. He was Pope from 1978 up until his death in 2005. So we're talking about 27 years and led the Catholic Church through a lot of changes. You know, he was influential in implementing or beginning to implement many of the thoughts of Vatican II theology and many changes in the world, social, ethical, you name it. He led the church through it. And Leo has a short article on him that will be coming out too. And there's been, Leo, you point out well that there's just been many, many biographies written on John Paul II, yeah, which attests to him as a figure and the importance and the roles that he played in the 20th century. How many biographies have been written on him? Would you have any idea?
Well, dozens, and because he's one of the major, you know, figures in not only Roman Catholic contemporary history, but also, you know, in general history. I think it is widely recognized that he was very influential in the whole fall of the, you know, communist regimes in the Cold War, after the Cold War, and being a Polish Pope, coming out of one of those and being very outspoken against it, he was, it is accredited to him having an important role in facilitating the process of the dissolution of the communist regimes. So,
and his voice was a valid one, because if we think about him being born near Krakow in 1920, which would have made him a young man, when Hitler and Stalin were at arms, and sure, just all that he lived through and saw as a young man, which would have influenced his.
Yeah, and also he was the first pope who actually interpreted the global figure of the role of the papacy, of the pope. I mean, Pope Paul VI was also did some traveling. He visited Constantinople. He visited Jerusalem, but still within the Mediterranean. Pope John Paul II was the one who actually traveled all over the world, visiting the four corners of the world, and so expanding, stretching the influence, the visibility of the Pope beyond European borders. And so making him, and it was a very long pontificate, mm-hmm. so unusually long, from 1968 to 2005. Mm-hmm. So unusually long for an average mm-hmm. Pontificate. So a trendsetter, shaping the Catholic Church and the papacy, and being a leading figure not only in church politics, but in world politics. And so being also a major player in significant debates in society, in ethics, religion, the interplay between religion and ideologies and so on. So this you know, shows the importance of his life and the interest that it raised and still is raising in different, you know, parts of the public opinion, not only the religious Catholic public opinion, but also the wider public opinion.
Our objective today is to provide a very fair, a balanced and truthful look at his life, especially as the Pope and his role as Pope and leader of the Catholic Church. Most people, you mention his name, and there's the tendency and the desire to just look at all the positives of his life and underscore what he did and what he accomplished. Rightly so. Oftentimes, however, neglecting the aspects of his Mariology, for example, or the theology that was very influenced by Vatican II that shaped his papacy and the way he led the Catholic Church. So there's definitely the desire to examine that aspect of it while being, as we said, fair and truthful and balanced. I think there's a strong tendency, especially going all the way back to our first episodes, of taking a very atomistic approach to understanding John Paul II's papacy and highlighting the aspects that we like about it and extrapolating them out and celebrating them and putting them on a pedestal while disregarding other aspects, maybe his strong Mariology and devotion to Mary and the adjectives he used to describe her as something we can just set aside, but failing to recognize that it was all encompassed. It was it's impossible to separate the two, and that they must be understood as being together and part of the theological system that is the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, he was very involved in people often refer to as being the culture wars of the 70s and 80s. And much of the evangelical interest in present-day Roman Catholicism came out of those culture wars because of the strong influence of secularism on Western societies, leading to the implementation of euthanasia, abortion, genetic engineering, and so on. John Paul II stood firmly against those trends and being a player in the culture wars of the day. And evangelicals began to be aware of those issues and understood John Paul as an ally, as a friend, as a champion of those culture wars, and maybe not seeing what he was also standing for on other aspects of theology, ethics, and society. And so the positive picture that John Paul II has in the evangelical public opinion, stems out of this culture war context. It was the context that was the milieu of evangelicals and Catholics together. The initiative started by Chuck Colson and Neuhaus back in the 90s, calling evangelicals and Catholics to stand together to fight this cultural wars. So he's very popular because he was approached as a champion of the culture of life against abortion, against euthanasia, against the relativistic trends in secular Western societies. And but in order to be fair to him, we, since he lived a long life and very productive, very fruitful in many respects, we have to be aware of as much as we can of the full picture, not only concentrating on one single, although important as it is, but it is only one aspect of his legacy.
What are some of the aspects, you know, like you highlighted the culture wars that he fought alongside oftentimes evangelicals. What would be some of the aspects that were not seen as much that we need to be aware of,
well,
as evangelicals?
Yeah, first of all, think about the motto that he chose for himself. You know that popes, once elected, they have to choose, well, actually bishops, once nominated, they have to choose a motto, a single phrase capturing what they want to, what they think of themselves.
How to define the papacy.
Yeah, how to define the role or the office. And Pope John Paul II chose the title or the motto Totus Tuus, which is a Latin phrase, totally yours, meaning totally yours, totally dedicated to you. You might think that this is expressed to or directed to God or Christ or the Trinity, but you're wrong if you think this way, because John Paul II addressed this motto, indicated that he wanted to live for Mary, totally yours, totus tuus, totally yours, all totally dedicated to Mary, living his own life for Mary, on the basis of Mary, towards Mary, in the care of Mary, in the company of Mary, having Mary always alongside, always together with him. And so that shows light, or sheds light, on the often referred to as the Christ-centeredness of John Paul II. He was Christ-centered because he spoke about Christ, of course, but always in the context of this Mariological devotion or Marian devotion, which was so deep to be written in his own personal motto. And it was not only a motto, he actually displayed his Mariology, his Marian devotions, his Marianism, in a thoroughgoing way, on a daily basis. Every single homily, every single document, every single speech contained references to Mary. So that Christ-centeredness needs to be read in the light of this Marian-centeredness. Mm. And for John Paul II, the two were not in conflict, were totally in agreement. But the point is this a biblical agreement? Can you be Christ-centered in you being Mary-centered at the same time? Is it not the centrality recognized to Christ, something that needs to be considered as being really central and not co-central together with other commitments?
You mentioned his the Marian influence on his title, and then as being evident in all of his encyclicals. Like, what are some other ways that we would see the Marian influence practically played out in his life?
Well, for example, he was the one, the Pope, who ended the millennium and introduced the Catholic Church to the new millennium. So the whole 2000 Jubilee, he thought of it as a important event to reaffirm the message of the Catholic Church and to launch it into the new millennium. Now, around those jubilee, the first act that he performed in the new millennium was to dedicate the whole world to Mary. So it was the dedication of the world to the care and protection of Mary. Hmm. And that shows the fact that his first thought in thinking about the new millennium was to make sure that Mary was in charge. Secondly, he was also very much into the secrets of Fatima, the Fatima apparitions of Mary. You know, those apparitions taking place in Portugal and some of them being hidden to the public. And so he knew those secrets and he oftentimes made reference to them as being the guiding prophecies for the day. He also, as he was also...
the attempt on his life.
Though. Yeah, he suffered this attempt on his life and he attributed his survival to the intervention of Mary. Hmm. So he thought of Mary as being a player in historical events, personal events, church events. He thought of Mary as being an active player. So his way of divine providence was very blurred, biblically speaking, if not totally mistaken.
Yeah, heretical.
And thinking of Mary as the major player in his personal life, in historical events, in world affairs. And so you see this Marianism punctuating his life and pontificate and being the common thread. So everything we say about his Christ-centeredness needs to be read in the light of his Marian-centeredness.
Which was on full display.
Yes, yes. It was not hidden. It is not something that you have to be very careful to look at it because it's very apparent. It's there. The problem oftentimes is that we don't see it or we don't want to see it because we want to underline the so-called commonalities.
Well, I mean, going back to 1987, he wrote the encyclical, one of his more well-known encyclicals, Redemptoris Mater, which is the Redeemer, the Mother of the Redeemer. What was that? What was the contents of that encyclical?
That was a very telling encyclical because there he provides basically a biblical theology centered on Mary. The retelling of salvation history from the Garden of Eve to the new heavens and the new earth centered on Mary's role. So basically is a retelling of the gospel in Mariological lenses. That's what it is. And it is not Christ-centered. It is Marian-centered. Of course, according to him, the two things are not in conflict. But from a biblical point of view, Mary is not at the center of salvation history. Mm-hmm. It is Christ who is the pinnacle, is the one uniting salvation history and being the center of it.
So here's a question in light of what you just said. And also earlier we said, here's where the strong tendency is to see the atomistic approach to John Paul II and downplaying this Mary, very Mary-centered theology, and elevating the Christ-centered theology as if we could separate the two, and usually there's attempts to do that. So, how do we take an honest approach at that? And what's the danger of one not separating the two, and the necessity for understanding those together? Without, you know, if we think back to our interview with Dr. Michael Reeves that we had a few weeks ago. We were talking about justification and the JDDJ document, and there's always this reality that the criticism that why do you always just focus on the negatives? You know, what's the point? Why can't we celebrate what we have in common? And that would be certainly a common, perhaps, reaction to this type of discussion of why don't we just celebrate the good get of it? And you know, okay, yeah, there's things we disagree on. What's the danger of that? And why is it necessary to take a more systemic view of John Paul's theology.
Yeah, yeah.
The second.
I think that if you approach everything selectively, you end up in projecting what you want to see in the things that you want to discuss or analyze. It's not, you know, the subject itself that defines himself, but is what you want to see in it. And if you have a selective approach, you end up in having a very narrow, limited understanding. So what we are saying is not doing some conspiracy theory, saying, oh, it's hidden here and there, only those who have the right codes can understand this. Pope John Paul II was very adamant about, very clear about his Marian devotions, and he put it everywhere. So it is our task to read it and to take into account and to try to make sense of the connections that he makes between Christ and Mary, for instance. And as we see the references to Christ, we have to be aware that there is another side that the Pope wanted us to see. He's not hiding. He's not saying, you know, these are secret things. They are there. And if you don't do that, we have a misrepresentation. We have a caricature. We have a projection of what is not there. It is the according to our own image and picture, but not according to a fair description of him himself.
I think that misrepresentation is key to understand. Again, responding to that question, well, what's the point in pointing out his devotion to Mary? Why don't we just highlight the positives? Is that it's subtle, but if you just highlight the Christ-centered aspects of it with neglecting this, then you give a false image, really, of what his papacy was about, what Roman Catholic theology is all about. When we say at the Reformation Initiative that Roman Catholicism is a severely flawed theological system, well, we have to talk about the whole package. We have to look at it as a theological system. If we take John Paul II's theology, for example, and separate it as if the two were unrelated, then we have a misrepresentation of not only what he believed, but what the Roman Catholic Church teaches, and it can be misleading to someone who may be exploring the faith. What's Catholicism about? What's evangelicalism? What should I believe? And so, if there's only this aspect of the Christocentric, or you know, elevated, then it provides a false image. And then someone goes down the road and realizes the Marian devotion aspect of it. Then it's okay. I guess that's okay. You know, there's the necessity of.
Yeah. If we want to approach John Paul II, one way of doing it is to read the 14 encyclicals that he signed and wrote, not just one. Many evangelicals, they say, the Evangelium Vitae, the encyclical on ethics, on bioethics, you know, life issues, abortion, the end of life, and so on. Oh, that's very important. Yes, that's one. But there are other 13 encyclicals. One of them is on Mary. Another one is on the Eucharist, being the center of church life, reinforcing this Catholic idea that grace comes to us through the sacraments of the church, and the sacraments of the church represent the presence of Christ, the living Christ embodied in the institutional church. So carrying the traditional, although renewed, teaching of the Catholic Church, and this is John Paul. Faith and Reason, another encyclical, stressing the Thomistic approach to the topic of the relationship between faith and reason, claiming that reason has some autonomy, degrees of independence from faith, and faith only adds something more on what reason can achieve in and of itself. So in another aspect of his teaching, and the encyclical on unity, ecumenism, Ut Unum Sint, 1995, calling all Christian churches and movements to come together under a revised, renewed structure of the papacy, not recanting it, not renouncing it, but showing the willingness to change some of the peripheral aspects of the papacy in order to for other Christians to come under it. So that was also John Paul II reaffirming traditional Catholic teachings with regards to the Eucharist, the papacy, Mariology, the sacraments, and as well as affirming, you know, the good points on life issues. So we have to be fair in understanding the whole that he wrote, that he stood for, and trying to see the connections in his own terms, and then, you know, make an assessment.
So, okay, so wrapping up this discussion and kind of summarizing everything that we've said here, as we as evangelicals look at the life and reflect on the life of John Paul II, what is his legacy and how do we understand it through evangelical lenses?
Well, certainly, as we said earlier on, it's a major, you know, figure that we have to come to terms with. Otherwise, we cannot understand post-Vatican II Catholicism. But we have to do it properly, not selectively, not randomly, not atomistically. We have to do it systemically, historically, in an informative way. And so one way would be to read not only bits and pieces of the good phrases, but to read more extensively what he wrote in terms of encyclicals, in terms of the catechism of the Catholic Church. Under his papacy, the Church launched this idea of gathering together the full teaching of the Catholic Church, which is still valid today. So he was a great enforcer of the Catholic faith, the whole of it, not parts of it. And if we want to come to terms with his legacy, we have to be fair and honest to him and to do our homework, not only being impressed by the cultural war's context, but also being aware of his theology, his legacy, his devotions, his passions, his commitments, which cannot be simply labeled as biblical and Christ-centered. He is a very complex figure. That's what I want to say. It is not an easy person to put in a box, saying, oh, he was a Christ-centered man, leader. That's very simplistic, oversimplistic, and not fair to his own work. We need to develop a more accurate and informed understanding of his legacy. And this is something that is something of a homework that we need to do as evangelicals. So far, we have focused on bits and pieces of John Paul II. Those who were more familiar with our own concerns and anxieties. But there are other aspects that are missing around the table of our discussion that need instead to be taken into consideration.
Yeah, and I think that what we said here about Pope John Paul II it's helpful because it's so applicable to pretty much every other aspect of Roman Catholicism, whether it's a theological doctrine we're discussing or a figure such as John Paul II, that it needs to be understood in its wider picture, and the full picture needs to be understood and known. But yeah, I think that's a fitting way and great way to wrap up the first season of the podcast. It's exciting to have 20 episodes under our belt and what we've learned in this first season, and we'll take the summer off And that doesn't mean we won't be attending emails or reading those. So we really, really appreciate those of you who have, you know, written us or given us feedback. Or, again, if you have questions or if you have a subject that you'd like us for us to discuss that would help you better understand Roman Catholicism, then we're very happy to receive those emails. But at least from me, thank you for your support and listening for this first season, and we're excited to put together a plan for season two this summer.
Yeah, and if you'd be interested in supporting the work of the Reformanda Initiative, we should have an announcement at some point during the summer on how you can do that. We have been established as a nonprofit organization, and so soon we'll be able to receive donations that would be tax deductible for example, our listeners in America that would like to partner with the work that we're doing here. If you want to partner with us right now, send us an email. We'll go ahead and tell you ways that you can support the work that God has provided for us to do here. One last thing before we go, Leo has two great resources that have been published by Christian Focus. In 2017, Leo, your book, A Christian's Pocket Guide to Mary, Mother of God, was published. So as you've listened to this podcast and you thought to yourself, hey, I need to understand more how Mariology developed and what that means within Roman Catholicism, that's a great resource. You can find it on Amazon and other online bookstores. Leo, in that book, do you talk about the Mariology of the popes, or is that in your other book, A Christian's Papa Guide?
No, I talk in this book, in this Mary book, I talk about the Mariology of John Paul II, of Pope Benedict, and Pope Francis.
Okay, so yeah, if you want a resource to help you on your journey to try to understand how Mariology shaped and influenced Pope John Paul II, that's a great resource for you to use.
Put a link to that book in our episode notes. And then Leo has the book coming out, Same Words, Different Meanings. It was supposed to be published in June, but unfortunately the coronavirus pandemic has pushed back the publication date of that book. We're not sure yet, unless you have an update, Leo, no, when it will come out. So we'll keep you updated on that, but excited for that resource to come out eventually too.
Yeah. So tell your friends about the podcast. We're praying for you as you wrestle with Roman Catholic theology and practice from an evangelical perspective, and we're praying that it would be a useful tool for you as you engage your Roman Catholic friends and family members with the gospel of grace. We pray for God to move in those conversations and that you would be equipped and informed. So follow us on Facebook at Reformanda Initiative, on Twitter at Reformanda Rome, and obviously our website, www.reformandainitiative.org. You can find articles and resources and a form if you want to contact us. So have a great summer, and we'll wrap up season one saying, as usual, from Rome, God bless.